Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn, Boys Next Door Window Cleaning, Mark Greshner Photography, Riviere Ag Sales, Sass Selects Football, and Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Before we get to our guest, Riders coach Craig Dickinson, with the pandemic forcing so many colleges and universities to go online next semester, many recent high school grads are taking a gap year. Then there's you, who should be considering a gap forever. Find out why with today's list of the top signs you aren't meant for college. You're a terrible test taker. Okay, except pregnancy tests. You've aced those multiple times. You graduated high school with a 4.0 blood alcohol level. The rest of the family calls you the dumb one, and you're a Kardashian. Another top sign you aren't meant for college. You think you're already a political science scholar because you follow Ted Nugent on Twitter. Your favorite summertime activity is licking toads. Another top sign you aren't meant for college. You just found out BA doesn't stand for badass. The only book you read this year is Facebook. And every career test you take gives you the same answer. Stripper. You got to put yourself through college, right? Time now to hear from Riders head coach Craig Dickinson. All right, Coach Dickinson joining us on the phone. Now, Dickie, I know you're in Regina, and we'll get to that in a second because that involves quarantine. But the last I talked to you, you were about to do some chores with Mom and Dad. And the last I heard from you, you sent a picture, and they were repping Calgary and Saskatchewan while playing cards with you. How did the time go with Mom and Dad?
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun. We were playing our favorite card game, Michael, is Pinochle, and we play it all the time when I'm home. So a lot of fun. Three-handed, four-handed, whenever we can play, that's what we like to do.
Did you get the house painted and the planters done for your dad?
You know, we did. We got I can't say we got the house painted, but we have a plan for the house. we have somebody that is willing to do the work. It rained pretty much the whole time I was there. So I didn't get the house painted, but we did get the planters built for my dad.
Yeah.
And last I talked to him, there's some potatoes and some corn that's starting to sprout up. So good news down there.
There you go, man. That's awesome. So you made it back to Regina. You're in what day are you in your quarantine?
I am in day 11. So I'm almost there. I'm down. I'm on the home stretch here, and I'm anxious to be done with the quarantine and able to get out a little bit.
Yeah, so what does that entail? Like, you just got to stay in your house? You can't leave your house or your dwelling?
It's pretty tight, you know, and I'm respecting the rules and doing what they asked me to do. So I'm actually staying at the U of R. They got some apartment housing here that I'm staying in. And I can't get outside very much because I don't have a yard, but what I can do is go outside every once in a while, either early in the morning or late in the evening, and just kind of get some fresh air. But I have to, you know, have to have my mask on. I have to make sure I'm all by myself and not wandering around too much. So, I certainly appreciate being able to get back into the country, and the very least I can do is make sure I'm playing by the rules and doing what they asked me to do.
So are you, is it an exercise in self-discipline? Have you always been self-disciplined, I guess?
Well, you know what? I'm getting better as I get older. I think as you get older, you start to get a little more of a routine in your life. The nice thing is I do have some weights here. The guys at the football office, Jordan Greenlee and Nick Boley, they set me up with a little workout room here in my apartment. So I do have the ability to break a little sweat and stay in shape a little bit. But yeah, anytime you have to stick around and kind of be holed up for a couple of weeks, you really have to work hard at having a plan and making sure you got lots to do. So I'm watching a lot of film, doing a lot of work on these global players. I feel like we're in really good shape in terms of our ability to watch those guys and evaluate them.
Is this batch of, or crop for better, for lack of a better word, is this crop of global players better than last year's crop of global players?
Yes, they are. But it's not necessarily that there's, you know, better global players out there. It's just that we've done as a league a lot better job of identifying them this year. Last year it was kind of a little bit late in the game, and a lot of us weren't quite sure what the global initiative was going to look like, and we did the best we could. But this year, I got to tell you, there's some good football players in this global draft, and there's some really good kickers and punters. That's what I'm looking at right now. I think you'll see some of these guys playing on Saturdays and Sundays in our league here in the next few years.
Really interesting. Soccer backgrounds of these guys?
You know what it is, Michael? It's all the Australians.
They're all
good punters. I mean, I bet you I've watched 6 or 7 of them that I think could come in and play right now. I mean, they grow up with that Australian football. We had one in Josh Bartel.
Yeah.
And they just grow up kicking the football, you know. In North America, you grow up throwing it, but down there, you grow up kicking it to each other. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of them that are really good punters, and there's some pretty good kickers down there as well. So we'll see.
I think you'll
see a lot of those guys picked.
Were you in San Diego when Darren Bennett was there? Because I remember hearing a story about Junior Seau saying this punter kicks the ball down. He was an Aussie rules guy. And he goes down and absolutely lights up the returner because he's used to tackling. So he goes, I was like, holy cow, we got ourselves a machine as a punter.
Yeah, I was there when Darren was there. And in fact, I still stay in touch with him. And he trains guys in Australia to come up and kick here in the States or in Canada. So there's a real pipeline of Australian punters, and I think you're going to see some good ones. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, and those guys.
I think at the globals, those are the guys that are going to make the most impact early on.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, is there any other position that they're kind of better at or they're getting good at?
You know, I don't really know, Michael, because I haven't watched every guy.
Yeah.
You know, we've split it up. Jeremy's got 2 or 3 position groups. Kyle's got some. Chad Hudson's got some. So we're going to get together next week when all of us are out of our quarantine period and try to put our heads together and put a board together. But I've just looked at the kickers and punters and then just briefly scanned a couple of other guys that have played in the States at receiver, for example. But I would say the strongest position group of the globals as of now that I've looked at is the kickers and punters.
You mentioned on a previous chat that one thing you were hoping to do is get better special teams wise. Is there a unit or an area of special teams you need to be better at?
Yeah, our punt team wasn't good enough last year. You know, and there's a lot of reasons for that. I've got to do a better job of coaching those guys. We've got to do a better job of finding some guys that can disrupt and play gunner for us. You know, we lost a couple of our really good gunners from the previous year, and it hurt us a little bit, there's no doubt. And we were still getting adjusted to a new punter. You know, one thing about John is he does kick the ball a long way, so you've got to adjust your coverage principles and do a better job of getting downfield. So I felt like by the end of the year we were pretty solid, but, boy, we struggled early in the season. And so if that was, you know, if there was one group of people on the special teams, I think our punt team's got to get better as a whole.
Well, we talked about this, though, and John told me that's the first time anybody at the pro levels really helped me with the way I kick the ball. And you adjusted his step pattern. You shortened his step pattern. Did you notice a difference in the way he punted and in translation to help your coverage team out that way?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, that's one thing about John. He is a true pro. When you ask him to do something, he's gonna do it. And if he doesn't know how to do it, he's gonna learn and figure it out and then get there eventually. So, we got him a lot shorter. He was really long. We shortened him up and tried to change his launch angle from going out to more up. And I thought he did a really good job. I mean, he's a very strong player and can flip the field. So we don't want to take that away from him, but I felt like we were able to shorten him up and give our cover guys a little better chance late in the season. And I thought by the end of the year we were a pretty solid cover group.
Hey, Dickie,
just early on we struggled.
Yeah, Dickie, speaking of kicking, and it's a passion of yours, why is it that a kicker can go out and he can nail a 32-yard field goal 9 or 10 out of 10 times, but he goes out and he kicks a 32-yard extra point, and it's like the first time he's ever tried to make that kick? I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know either on that one. You know, who knows? Maybe there's a little more focus on the field goal because it's worth three. I don't know, but.
I think you're onto something there, Coach. Like, do you think psychologically with everybody on the field, and I love the rule change moving it back to the 32-yard line because it's not a gimme now, like a 32-yard kick, but do you think psychologically it's like everybody lets up all around because it's still only for 1 point?
Yeah, I think there you might be onto that a little bit. And here's the other thing. From being a kicker myself, you're always expected, like, if you ever missed a PAT, that was really bad. You know, like, you shouldn't miss one ever. So maybe they put a little more pressure on themselves on PATs than they should. You know, and maybe they get a little bit tight.
Yeah.
But I really can't figure it out either. The one thing is, you can put the ball wherever you want on the PAT. So if it's a situation where you feel more comfortable kicking from the left hash, you can put it there. But for some reason, yeah, you'll see PAT. PAT percentages in both our leagues, the CFL and the NFL, are lower than, I think, field goals at that range.
Well, I'm trying to hook the listeners in here, so we'll get to the meat and potatoes why I called in a second, but I want a quick comment on Sam Hurl and your thoughts. He retired earlier in an interview with me. Just your thoughts on the career of Sam Hurl.
Sam Hurl is a good football player and a good dude. You know, he was one of those guys we drafted, I think, in 2011 and when I was here the first go-around. And really just a phenomenal football player. He was one of those guys that came in as a young player. I think he was only 21 or 22 when he first got in the league. And just made a huge impact right away. He was a great special teams player, smart, tough, could really run. Just a solid guy. I mean, he had a great career, and he was a guy I really enjoyed coaching. I think he's going to be successful in whatever he does, but we're going to miss him in football because we really enjoyed having him.
Coach, Black Lives Matter is big in the States, in your country. Just what do you make of what's going on down south?
Well, it's a little wild and crazy, and the reality is it's about time. You know, that's the one thing. It's been going on for a long time, and you know what? We're not immune to it up here in Canada either. We know that there's prejudice out there, and we know that things need to get better for all people, not just people of certain colors. So I think the Black Lives Matter is very important. I think it's more than overdue that we started realizing that we've always been a little bit racist, and we need to make some changes down there. And I think what you're seeing in the last month or so is just an accumulation of really frustrations that the Black community's had for a long time, and well-deserved frustrations, to be quite honest. They've been at a disadvantage, and I think it's great to see some attention to that, but there's a lot still to do. But I certainly support the Black Lives Movement, and I'm all in for that.
What's racial relations like in a locker room, the locker rooms you've been in? Can we find answers to what ails us in the outside world right in the locker room? Because you got Hispanics, you got foreign guys, now global guys. You've got, of course, Black players, predominantly Black sport. You got white Canadian prairie boys. You all come together. In this case, you wear the one color, green and white, to try to win a championship. Can we find what ails us out there? Can we find the solution in a locker room?
I think you might be onto something there, Michael, because that's the one place it seems like all the differences kind of go away. Doesn't we all know we're different, but it seems like when we're pulling for a common cause and a common purpose, we seem to forget about those differences and just focus on the similarities. So I think you're onto something. I think it'd be worthwhile to look into that as a coach, and maybe even from the academic side of things, and say what happens in a sports locker room that brings people together, and how can we maybe, you know, try to model some of our behavior in the outside world on what happens in a locker room. Because I do think you see guys come together in a special way when you're in a locker room.
Coach, what can you do as a head coach to foster those relationships? Because I talked to Dan Farthing a few installments ago on my podcast, and he had said to me, you know, I'm embarrassed to say we didn't really hang out after practice. We had issues with rooming where we didn't really try to break down those barriers, even in terms of rooming on the road. What can you do as a head coach and an organization do to foster those relationships?
Well, I think related to what Dan said. I think you try to make a conscious effort to do things together, to spend time together, and not just time, you know, goofing around or going to a meal somewhere, but actually try to bring young men into your house. You know, that's one thing I learned when I was in Oakland. I worked for a guy, Tom Cable, and then I worked with John Fossil primarily. And one thing Coach Fossil did that I thought was just excellent and really, I think, creates a lot of trust is he would invite the players into his home, and we'd have meals together. And he'd introduce his players, you know, the players to his kids, his wife, and his family. And I think when you do stuff like that, you get a trust, a trust factor built up. And then once there's a trust factor, I think people can make mistakes, and you're given the benefit of the doubt because people trust you and know that you've got a good heart and a good soul. And then maybe you're not quite as quite as sensitive, or maybe quite as easily offended when you know that person across from you is a good person and he's just like you. So I think that's something we got to work on, and I'll certainly do my best to try to help move this along as well. But I think anytime you can get together off the field, be with each other when you're not in necessarily a work environment, get a chance to know each other's families, and you realize, hey, my kids enjoy playing with your kids and vice versa. I think that's when you can really bridge gaps.
Coach, last couple of questions for you, and I thank you for joining us here. The wage cuts that came down here, the proposed wage cuts from Ambrosi, that's going to affect the operational side, including your coaches. How does that play with you and your coaches right now?
Well, nobody's happy to hear about that, but the reality is we all know what's ahead of us. We got a challenging road with COVID. We're still all very much optimistic we can have a season this year, but we know that it's going to be tough sledding for the next few years to try to make up for some of the revenue that we've lost already. So when Jeremy and I get back into the office next week, that's one of our first and really one of our priorities is to look at that and see how it affects us. Coaches I've talked to have all been good. You know, they understand that these are tough times. And the one thing I will say is the leadership in Saskatchewan with Craig Reynolds at the top and then Jeremy O'Day, like one thing you know with those guys is when they say, hey, fellas, you know, we got to tighten our belts up a little bit to get by. You don't question that because they're good people, they're honest, and we trust them. So when news comes down from above that there's going to be some belt tightenings, the coaches, for the most part, are very understanding, know that it wouldn't be happening if it wasn't necessary.
Sam Hurl told me, though, it all starts with good coaching. He said, when you're picking a program for your son, you got to really do the homework on the coaching. Coaching's where it's at. So, Coach, with regard to this, do you think a cut, and they already announced that they were going to reduce the number of coaches before this whole pandemic hit, and we've already dealt with that new world. Now, further coaching cuts, do you think that might eventually affect the product that we see on the field? Because it comes down to good coaching.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I agree with Sam, but I'll also add this. Good management is big time, too. And that's the one thing, you know, you usually, if you've got good management and good leadership at the top, they're usually pretty smart about who they hire as coaches. So I would agree with Sam in some ways on that. I do think, Michael, you're going to see, unfortunately, good young coaches leave. And what I mean by that is, take, for example, our defensive line coach, Ben Olson. You know, he's in the States right now. We can pay him X amount of dollars. Well, as soon as it goes to the States, it's X amount of dollars at 75%. And then now you start cutting that, you're going to lose coaches like that. He's going to have job offers down in the States that'll pay him more than what we can pay him. And that's too bad because the hardest part, I think, as a head coach is not necessarily hiring your coordinators. It's who's going to be the next coordinator when Jason Moss takes a head coaching job or Jason Shivers takes a head coaching job? Who's the next guy in line? And if you don't have good young coaches, I think you'll see a drop off in some of the coaching at that point. So hopefully, you know, hopefully the league understands that and hopefully this is just a temporary thing and not something that we can expect down the road.
My last question for you. You have confidence in your leadership in Regina and in Saskatchewan, but are you concerned about a lack of confidence for the leadership in the CFL? Maybe not even from you, but as you watch this from outside, the players in the league don't seem to be anywhere near on the same page, which ultimately is going to affect you as a head coach.
Yeah, and the reality is, no, I'm not. I think Ambrosi, Randy's doing a great job, and I think a lot of what you see right now is just noise. I think players are frustrated because they want to know what's going on, but you know, I sent out an email on Sunday night to our players and said, hey, the only answer we can have right now for you is not the answer we want. So relax, control what you can control, and keep your fingers crossed that we can have a season. Because the reality is we all want to play a season, and there's no use getting too uptight about not having an answer right now. You know, do what you can do, control what you can control, and let it play out. But I tell you what, I think – Randy has done a great job. I know at times you read about stuff and you're wondering what's going on, but the reality is he's worked as hard as anybody I know trying to get this thing right. He's put his neck on the line with this global initiative, and I do think it's going to work. I think if we have time and we give it time, I think you're going to see some big things happen with that. And I like him as a person. He's a straight-up guy, and I think he's doing everything he can to help the league. So I have full faith in him.
All right, Coach, when you're done your quarantine, call me up. Since you're in town, we'll go for an ice cream or something.
Man, I cannot wait. I'm down to 3 days, so wish me luck.
Okay, buddy, thanks for this. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Michael.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.